Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and, of course, we have with us this evening a very, very special guest and good friend, Bill Sardi. He's a health journalist, and he, of course, does tremendous research and study into the scientific information behind what's going on today. And this evening we're going to be talking about stem cell research. Does stem cell research offer the hope of repairing people who have severed spinal cords or people who've had strokes or people who have Parkinson's disease? We're promised all sorts of wonderful things if we will simply finance stem cell research, embryonic stem cell research, allow the destruction of viable fetuses or viable blastomeres, call it what you will, fertilized eggs. I'm going to let Bill tell you the story. Good evening, Bill. How are we doing?
Good evening. We certainly can't ignore stem cell and all of the technology now being promoted, because in 1 week, more has happened than has happened in 5 years, and we've seen a tremendous, tremendous upsurge of information and stories about stem cell. Well, they call it technology. I think it's close to calling it fraud. And that's what our report is about tonight. Why should everyone be interested in this? Because what they're proposing to do is either to take stem cells from little tiny embryos and use them to help you get new brain cells if your grandma gets Alzheimer's disease, or if you have a spinal cord injury, or if you have night blindness, retinitis pigmentosa. You could get a new set of cells, and that's what this is all about. Or let's even hyperspace once more, because at the end of all this, where they're headed is, why don't we just clone you? Why don't we just get some of your cells, clone you, and have this duplicate, which we now can get cells from? This is unheard of, unbelievable. It's science without any boundaries. It's science without any discipline. And, of course, it's science loaded with fraud, as you'll find out tonight as you listen to the story of what's going on in the world of stem cell technology. And you've read my report, I think, a little bit of what we have sent you. And, of course, it's striking. And, of course, what caught my attention was Forbes magazine showing the billionaires that are behind this. And why are they there? Because there's a presidential ban on embryonic stem cell technology. So if you're listening tonight, stem cells are when you have old cells that die, a new one comes in and replaces it. But very early on, that new cell is what we call a stem cell. It doesn't know what kind of cell to be yet. It's a virgin cell, and then it becomes what we call differentiated or specialized. So it becomes a heart cell or a nerve cell or a muscle cell, whatever it becomes. And it's in that stem cell state that they want to get these. Now, you can glean stem cells from adults. You can get them from embryos. You can get them from umbilical cord blood. The question is any of this ethical?
All right, fine. We're going to be back here in just a moment or two with Bill Sardi as we begin analyzing this. I'll never forget when I first went to medical school, and they talked about the cells with a pluripotential. A pluripotential. That means that a cell had a potential for many forms. Muscle cell, heart cell, nerve cell, fat cell. It could be any one of those cells. It had many potentials. That's what a stem cell is. Well, Bill, go ahead, pick the story up from there.
Well, of course, as we're saying, there is a presidential ban on embryonic stem cell technology, taking it from an embryo. Now, what's happened is they're there are a great many of these embryos available because fertility clinics, you see, take oocytes, eggs from women, and then sperm, and then they put them together and fertilize them, and then reimplant them in women. But in order to get this done, they need lots of eggs, and then they fertilize all those, and then they need a lot of them to get just a few to work. And this is where you get the triplets and the quadruplets, because sometimes there's more than one that, of course, becomes fertilized into a full pregnancy. So this is how you get this. But there's a ban on that. They will not allow any new stem cell lines. What we mean by line is they're already growing these things, just like you would plants.
Well, so, now, of course, does that say that nobody can do that? Does it mean that the federal government will not finance it?
That's right. They're doing it now. It means that they won't allow new ones. They won't federally fund the new parts of this, any new stem cell lines. But they've been going on at this since 1981, so it's not like something that was banned. So the billionaires have picked up where the government left off, and the story in Forbes is that we have this long list of Ray Dolby. You think of Dolby Radio Sound. Eli Broad made a lot of money in building and so on. Mike Bloomberg is the current mayor of New York. Larry Ellison, CEO of Oracle, Bill Gates, Microsoft, and the list goes on. And they're putting up a great deal of this money, and their faith, and I must say it's faith, is in this stem cell technology. Have they been conned? I think they have. They're putting their faith in this like a religion, and the question is about the ethics. They've moved far too fast. They've stepped over the line, and you see, the point is that we're living on an evening when just yesterday a company said they had found a way around the ethical dilemma of killing these little embryos that are in the fertility clinics. These are lives in limbo. In fact, there's even a group trying to get adults to adopt these little embryos and then get them implanted in a woman so they can become, you know, full pregnancy in a child. And so this is what we have in these fertility clinics going on. And, of course, a company yesterday made a giant press release. It had found an ethical way to do this because these little embryos are just maybe 8 to 10 cells in size at the very beginning.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here with just a moment with Bill Sardi. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bill is saying that recently, just within this last week or so, a company had said that found an ethical way to get embryonic stem cells from these oocytes or ovocytes, these frozen embryos, fertilized embryos, perhaps 10 or 12 cells in size, and but now they can do this without harming the embryo. Isn't it wonderful? Now we can begin doing embryonic stem cell research, and there will be no logical reason to object to it because we're not. Well, go ahead, tell the rest of the story, Bill.
Well, this is just part and parcel of the whole fraud in this whole area of technology. So they sent out a press release. We won't say the name of the company. Their stock earlier in the year was $3 a share. It had fallen to 40 cents. They put a report in Nature magazine. They then wrote a press release and said they had found this ethical way of removing just one stem cell and leaving the others there, and it would be no problem, no death to the little embryo. But somebody went back, some watchdog, and read the whole article in Nature magazine. It was exactly opposite of what it said in the press release, that they were able to get 91 separate cells removed, but that all the embryos died, and that only two stem cell lines were created out of the 91 separate cells that they removed. And, of course, they did all this. Their stock went up 358% to $1.83. That was from a low of 40 cents, all in this false press release. This is how unbelievably criminal science has now become over this stem cell thing. So you all understand there was a Korean researcher. This could not be done in the United States, they said, for ethical reasons. So a Korean professor at Seoul University got two articles published in Science Magazine, later retracted now, was in shame of course, asked to resign his post there. But this technology that he developed and got published was what got California into a passing, overwhelmingly, a $3 billion legislative package to promote stem cell technology in the United States. And California was going to get all the booty, all the jobs, all the stuff. And now the New York Times comes out with a thundering piece 1 week ago and says it concedes and admits stem cell technology is going nowhere. They don't think they would have anything to help anybody with any disease, even in a 10-year period, and most of it will be used to gain a better understanding of what causes these diseases. No practical cures may ever come from it. This is unbelievable for all of the money that we've been conned out of, all the billions of dollars, all of the politicians promoting this as if it were a religion, all of the shots taken at Christians for standing in the way of it over ethical boundaries and reasons, and of course, it's the Christians who are being fingered for standing in the way of people being able to get out of wheelchairs, being able to see again after being blind. And you know, the public's confused. Even the Christians are confused. Why wouldn't you want to take these cells and do this? But everything you know and have been told has been a fraud. The whole thing doesn't work. It can't work in the first place. Stem cells are from another body. Your body will perceive that those cells are other. That means there'll be an autoimmune reaction, and that means just like an organ transplant that will be rejected in time, you'll be on lifelong immune-suppressing drugs to tolerate them. Number two,
I'll never forget, of course, when here in California they got through this $3 billion estate initiative, and they had, of course, Christopher Reeves, who played Superman, and he's now in his wheelchair, and quadriplegic and pleading with people to vote for this so that he's going to be able to, you know, get out of his wheelchair and get, you know, back to what he was doing before. And this Fox, I think it was Michael Fox was his name. He's an actor, very young actor, with Parkinson's disease, is badly crippled by this. He's 40 years old. And this plaintive plea, you know, help us, help us. And, of course, it was all a fraud. It was the people who financed this whole $3 billion state initiative are the very people who are going to end up getting the whole $3 billion to put in their pockets, and it's not going to do any good at all. I shouldn't say that. They're going to be very happy. You can tell who they are. They have a big smile on their face. Having hoodwinked the American people, Christopher Reeves, as you know, has passed away, and there's no chance that this is going to solve the problems. Embryonic cells are not what you want to do. If you're going to do anything with stem cells, it has to be your own stem cells, which can be harvested and can be used, but we certainly don't know the potential for that as yet.
Well, we have a couple of companies trying to use adult stem cells from your own body and then taking them, putting them back in for treatment of heart disease and artery disease. But that isn't appropriate treatment. It still doesn't fix the problem. And over time, you'll end up with a problem as well, because the problem comes from the lack of the body's ability to make vitamin C. The animals don't get these diseases. So they're doing this. A warning went out in the London Times last week from scientists all over the world. Don't fall for all the scams involved in stem cells. People are getting on airplanes flying to South Africa, paying tens of thousands of dollars for treatment that does not work. Now, the Christopher Reeves was, of course, shown some little mice that supposedly had the stem cells implanted and got their ability to be mobile again back. But we don't know whether that was really true. What he saw might have been misleading. And the reason why I bring this up is before the professor in Korea was denounced and his papers retracted from Science Magazine, before that there was a lady from Korea who was paraded in front of the world, and she's 37 years old. She was paralyzed from some sort of an accident for the past 20 years. And, of course, they said that what they had been able to use is umbilical cord transplant performed in South Korea and she was able to get up and walk for the first time. Now, what's odd about this is this report came about at the end of, they said this at the December 2004. Now, they've had all of 2005, more than half of 2006, and yet no more word about this woman, no more word that they did 10 more cases or 2 more cases. You see, was it a fraud? How come we haven't heard an update? How come she's not in the public view? What happened to her if she actually got this implant? Is she able to, they show her standing here with a walker and some braces on her legs. But that doesn't mean that this has been successful yet. She has, of course, use of her arm, so it's hard to tell here what this all means. And, of course, was she paraded and used for this also? So they were starting to say, and in fact, United States representative was saying, well, he said, despite the effort by some to quell reality, one of the best-kept secrets in modern medicine today is that umbilical cord stem cells are curing people from terrible conditions and diseases. No such thing is happening. And, of course, this is what they're going on and saying, that these things are actually happening. Then they change their words, go on and say, well, has the potential to cure. Well, potential to cure and people that have been treated, but people who have been cured are two different things. They're experimenting. That doesn't mean that these things work yet. And, of course, what if I told you today, of course, everyone's concerned if you would get prion disease or one of these other mad cow diseases. What if I told you you got stem cells put in you and that might cause cancer? Yes, I said cancer because the very cells that the cancerous process go after are stem cells, the new ones that are generated in your body, and before they differentiate into a muscle cell or a liver cell or whatever, that is the time the cancerous process goes after those cells. So if you're injecting more cancer, more stem cells, they think you could be increasing the risk of cancer. And they're frightened about this, and they're actually thinking of using various chemicals and even natural herbs to stop cancer as they do these treatments. So there's a great risk that you certainly would have autoimmune reaction. You might get cancer out of this. They're saying you might even inject a virus. Remember the simian 40 virus when they had the polio vaccine, and then there was a virus hidden in there. And they're saying that is possible now with stem cell, that we shouldn't move so fast. Yet if you talk to people today, and they've done these research studies, the opinion polls in America are very favorable to stem cell technology. Why wouldn't you allow someone to walk again? Why wouldn't you take those cells? That isn't a life there in the fertility clinic. Or is it? You go to my website and take a look at the 5 stages of cells there, and once cells are fertilized, it becomes a little ball. What do you call that? When cells begin to multiply, that's a human life. And so that's what they want to take that from. And if it kills it, well, did you kill a human life? I can't see any other interpretation, but I wouldn't want to have this on me. There are ways of doing this with adult stem cells and so on. So don't think we're being overly critical or standing in the way of people finding a cure. But what we're being told about this is so fraudulent, there's probably no foreseeable way stem cell technology is ever going to work. And you are being flooded with this stuff and being asked to put up money for it. And because of your desperation and hope that someone close to you might be cured, of course, you stand in favor of.
Well, I think we saw how effective the emotional appeal was here in California, where by an overwhelming majority, the people voted $3 billion, and we're going to have to put that money back. We're going to have to pay back the bonds. There is nothing free about a bond issue. And who's going to benefit from it? Why, the very people who put the money to get it passed. And why did they put the money to get it passed? Because they were going to make a lot more money off the people of the state of California, who are going to have to pay back that, not $3 billion, but probably about $6 billion by the time we get through paying all of the interest. Well, Bill, go ahead, pick the story up there.
Well, and of course it goes on. In my story, you'll be able to see the whole report there at knowledgeofhealth.com if you want to go take a look yourself, print this out. But we can easily see that this, the fervor for stem cell technology has now gotten to almost be a religion. Democrat Nancy Pelosi quoting, saying stem cell therapy has the biblical power to cure, a Representative James Langevin of Rhode Island, who is a paraplegic, proclaimed that he has strong faith that we will find a cure. Faith, that's all they have. There is no foundation in this faith whatsoever. We have been fed nothing but falsehoods. This whole thing is not going to work. It's not going to work from, you know, we face an ominous time with so many elderly retirees. Are we going to promote more aborted fetuses so we can get embryonic stem cells so the older people can have brain cells injected at their brains? What are we going to do with new cells injected into our brain that are have no memory? They're memoryless. I'm trying to say the word. It's not going to work. Can't you see? It's real obvious. It's not going to work. It's real. This is just a jobs program for the research scientists, and they want endless money, more free money. They're complaining. I think they get about $40 million a year right now, but they're complaining they don't get enough money for the embryonic. That's what they want because that has the best chance of working. Let me tell you, the best chance is none. This isn't going to work. They're admitting it in the New York Times. They're saying that it's not going to work. You know, we had an era of time in medicine when we had names like Svent Georgi, who discovered vitamin C, Casimir Funk discovered many of the other vitamins, Louis Pasteur, pasteurization and germs, Fleming, the antibiotics, Salk, of course, the polio vaccine, and so on. We don't have names like that anymore. What we have is a research community that is studying things for the sake of studying them themselves. There is no practical medicine. There's no applied medical research anymore. They just want endless jobs programs. They want lifelong employment, and they don't want to find any cures. And that's what this stem cell technology is becoming. As the New York Times admits, we'll be studying this for 10 years, and all we'll be doing is gaining a better understanding of how these diseases occur. We're not probably going to come up with any cures. After being fed a bill of goods, see what they did? They paraded the woman who could walk again in Korea. We've never seen her again. They paraded the professor in Korea who said he was going to get various researchers from all around the world to go ahead with this, and then his paper was retracted, both papers in Science Magazine. All these were frauds. Would you call it, pretty low for someone to mislead a man in a wheelchair who was 1 week away from dying? That's what they did with Christopher Reeve. How low will you go? How far will you go with this falsehood? This is science without any boundaries. It's science without any discipline, and maybe it's not science at all. It's immoral and unbelievable where this has gone. And, of course, the odd part of it all is it's paralyzed the Christians who have the moral high ground here.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Bill Sardi. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bill has simply been pointing out that so much of what we see is illusion. I mean, we see a mouse that has dragging its hind legs, and then they show us a mouse that is able to walk. But is it even the same mouse? Can we really trust people who have a tremendous financial advantage down the line if they can get legislation passed that will appropriate $3 billion and they're going to get their share of it when the millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars are at stake? Do we have people of integrity and moral fortitude today in science? Or do we have people who are looking for personal advantage? And I think certainly the points that Bill has brought out about the fraudulent paper that came out in Korea. And, of course, where is the outcry from scientists all across America? There are so many of the drugs that are being approved now. They're not being approved because they're anything new. They're going to save human lives. they are approved because they're going to make a lot of money for the drug companies, and anybody who doubts that needs to read a book written by Dr. Marcia Angel, who was the editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, the most prestigious journal, a medical journal we have in the United States, comparable to the British Lancet. And then, of course, she had a position at Harvard University. She wrote a book called The Truth About the Drug Companies, which we do carry. You need to understand that so much of what they do is a scam. They don't even do the original research. It's all done by the NIH with your tax money. What they do is pay for the clinical trials, and they bribe doctors to carry out experiments on their children, on their patients many times without their knowledge. But once they can get those drugs onto the market, you're talking about hundreds of billions, if not billions of dollars of profit. Whether they're beneficial or not doesn't matter. The important thing is, can they give the public the impression, and that's why they're advertising them on television, and you see the fellow walking down the blue staircase as his cholesterol level goes down, and tell you want to ask your doctor about Crestor, but of course he'll never point out that there's no evidence it helps with either cardiac morbidity or cardiac mortality, although we would be glad to send any of our listening audience the flyer that comes with the Crestor package where it says exactly that. There's no evidence it helps with cardiac morbidity or mortality, but take our drug, and why? Because it's great for our profits. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, the tennis match that's going on, I should say, is in the laboratory, the scientific laboratories, and there are many federally funded research labs. And what has happened is we've got a situation with the stem cell technology where it's poised the Christians versus the scientists. And, of course, this is how it goes. The federally funded research labs can't use any federally funded equipment to do any stem cell research, embryonic stem cell research, with the federally funded equipment. So what they've done is purchased private but duplicate equipment, and then they put little stickers on the federally funded equipment and say, you can't do that experiment on this machine. And there's some mocking going on and some stickers being put on there, you know, that Christians are causing all this because the conservative Christians are standing in the way of people being able to walk or see again, all this kind of thing. Of course, this whole thing is contrived, and of course, it as I say in my article, we're back to the Earth is flat debate. If you go online and you see people that are really uninformed, they keep bringing up that those narrow-minded Christians once said that the Earth was flat. The Christians never said the Earth was flat. The Bible talks about a circular earth, and of course talks about a sunrise, a sunset, that people in one place and another, there was light and dark. So you couldn't have had that without a circular, a spherical earth. So the Bible knew this, but the scientists of the time, this was a few hundred years ago, were promoting a flat earth. And of course, they want to pin this on the Christians, just as they do this false argument. And this is what has come out of it all. Now, it's Andy Grove. He's from Intel, one of the billionaires behind the stem cell technology. And he says, science always wins out, but how many people will have to die in the meantime? And who he's talking about there, he's throwing the dagger at the Christians. They're the ones who are keeping these people from walking again. What a falsehood. This whole thing is a stack of cards that's crumbling, and they've all put their faith in it. It's unfortunate that the public has been misled.
Well, the old adage, it doesn't matter how ridiculous it is, if you say it often enough and convincingly enough, the majority of the people will believe. Well, we're going to be back here in just a couple of minutes with Bill Sardi as we begin exploring and continue exploring the stem cell scam. Certainly there's nothing wrong with trying to see what adult stem cells will do. But is there any promise at the present time that they're going to be able to solve the problems? Well, we'll find out when we get back here in just a moment with Bill Sardi. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest once again, Bill Sardi, is a health journalist who really does some amazing research, and you'll certainly want to go to his website at knowledgeofhealth.com. That's knowledgeofhealth.com, or you can go to AskBillSardi, SARDI.com. That's AskBillSardi.com, and a tremendous amount of information there. Go ahead, Bill.
You know, so many things we're hearing in the news today. I know the stem cell technology, because it affects so many people, or it will in their lifetime. It already has. You just don't know it because of the fraud involved in taking money out of your pocket for it. And, of course, we're wasting resources where we could go and really help people. We already know of molecules like resveratrol from the grapes that actually just erases the plaque out of the brain and can help people with existing Alzheimer's. We're not even using it because they haven't figured a way to profiteer on it when you can find it down at a health food store. So this is the problem that you have. We have a wonderful story in the news this week, and it was all about some sort of an execution molecule where we could actually get the cancer to be destroyed. And, of course, the executioner molecule, well, it turns out that you can make more of that executioner molecule with resveratrol. It's a little molecule, like I say. Of course, they don't want to tell you that. They want to tell you to wait around until they make a drug on this. Another interesting headline in the last week was a tremendous study, and it was done in Japan. They took 600 milligrams of vitamin C. Now, this was only in older adults. They had to be over 65 years of age. If they were younger than that, this didn't seem to work. But in these older adults, they were able to make this vitamin C work. 600 milligrams a day dropped the blood pressure considerably, I mean far more and safer than the regular medicines. And this was by about 17 points or so. I mean, it was quite a big drop on that first blood pressure number. It was about 9 or 10 points on the second blood pressure number. So what they did is this should have been worldwide headlines. Of course, it's been ignored. Nobody's heard of it. This is the whole story, and nobody knows what's going on. So yeah, I'm just pulling up the report here. 16 to 18 point drop in blood pressure. Now, it didn't occur in the younger adults, but for the ones that were a little bit older, age 67 to 83, why their blood pressure was about 154, dropped to 134.
That's all. Well, that's all right there, Bill. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Bill Sardi, and of course, he was just pointing out that a recent Japanese study showed that in people over 65, if you gave them 600 milligrams of vitamin C a day, why, they could drop the blood pressure 10 to 15 points. And so it was only in the older people, but this is a significant finding, and yet, of course, you're not hearing about this in the regular media because who's going to make any money? Certainly pushing vitamin C on older people. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, and, you know, this kind of goes on and on. And I have, in the past, of course, talked about sudden death and how to prevent that on my website, and that the government and all these companies went about in an effort to put defibrillators in every sports stadium, school, restaurant. And it's great for their sales, and they parade around the very few, usually younger people who may have been resuscitated. And by the way, maybe one or two out of 100 resuscitations is successful. And you may think that's something good, but, you know, a lot of these people don't live very long thereafter. But nonetheless, let's just take it what it is. But here's researchers in the American Journal of Preventive Medicine for October. And they're talking about a simulated community of 100,000 people, and if you had defibrillators versus fish oil, how many lives would you save? And, of course, you would knock down the mortality, cardiac mortality rate by 0.8% with the defibrillators if they were implanted, 3.3% if they were implanted, 0.8% if they were just those little paddles they put on your chest, but by 6.4% if you had fish oil in the community. In other words, it would work twice as good as the implantable defibrillator in your chest. Well, of course, I dream of that little fire box, you know, you see in schools and things, the little red box, and you're supposed to take the little hammer and break the glass and call the fire department. I keep thinking, well, I'd have a jar of fish oil in there, you know. In emergencies, you know, reach for the fish oil. Because, and we've been talking about this on my website, but now it comes out in the American Journal of Preventive Medicine that, sure enough, if we did this and gave a community omega-3 fish oil for middle-aged adults, why we'd see the cardiac death rate drop. It makes the heart less irritable, and one of the things that fish oil does is slows the heart rate by about 3 beats a minute. Now, that gives the heart more chance to rest in between beats and gives you back your youthful, slow heart rate that you once had. And, of course, that's good also. But what do beta blockers do? That's what beta blocker drugs do, only they make you fatigued, impotent, make you have breathing problems, cause brain and eye problems because you can't get enough circulation to these tissues above the neck because the heart isn't beating properly. Whereas with the fish oil, the heart actually beats stronger. So what happens here is that, you know, we ought to be using these fish oil product. We ought to be using it for to prevent sudden cardiac death. We ought to be using it to give our heart a rest and make the muscle less irritable. We ought to be using vitamin C to lower blood pressure in our older retirees instead of all these problematic medicines. And it's all in my website. Yes, we ought to be using things like resveratrol and other things when we're worried about the recurrence of cancer. We've got 10 million people living in the country who've had cancer treatment. They're still living, and they are often given nothing to prevent it from coming back. This is how irresponsible our healthcare system is. So in trying to give you practical answers, you want to come visit knowledgeofhealth.com. You're welcome. It's the information there is free. We try to provide it in simple form, and you'd especially want to check out some of the picture slides that we have where we can help you understand things just by looking at picture slides. Sometimes people just want to see something simple, and, of course, we do that now with picture slides where we can show you various things as well there. So,
what about magnesium as far as the cardiac rhythm is concerned and the hyper-irritability of the heart?
Well, there are two things for people. We have 2 million Americans in the country that have atrial fibrillation. Now, this is the fluttering of the top chambers of the heart. And they don't seem to have any answers for this other than it causes blood clots, so they give you a blood thinner. But that doesn't really prevent the problem. And they're noticing some other problems with all this and how you might go about fixing it. And, of course, the first thing I do with so many people when they ask me, now, I can't practice medicine, but I can tell them where to look for the information. And we point out to them that there are reports showing that magnesium relaxes smooth muscles. That's what your heart muscle is. So it does help, you know, with that as well as anxiety and other reactions and so on. So we're pretty much magnesium deficient and calcium rich. We're dairy country and has a lot of calcium in it. And calcium is the opposing. It's a muscle constrictor. Magnesium is a muscle relaxer. So you certainly think in preventing sudden cardiac death of magnesium, and then the second thing is fish oil. And a lot of people who have atrial fibrillation find their way out of it that way. And if they don't, then we think of natural ways to provide more energy to the heart muscle. That's coenzyme Q10. You can get that at health food stores. And then another thing that's recently cropped up is that you might have an infection. There are certain kind of germs that seem to get into the system, and people with atrial fibrillation seem that it's kind of hard to cure even with antibiotics. And you can go down to a health food store and get a little supplement. It's there on my report, and it's a little, comes from citrus extracts. And, of course, it tends to kill the little germ involved in attacking the heart muscle, and then you get well again. So all of these things are in the medical literature. We give you the citations. Try to pass on good information for you. I'm not a health guru. I'm not an expert. I am a good reporter, and we do cite all the references and give this information to you right from the Library of Medicine of the United States. So We're trying to, of course, give you all the science that gets overlooked by modern medicine as they try to peddle problematic, expensive prescription drugs on you. And if you're looking for a way out of those prescription drugs, well, then you might venture into some of these things, and you might just get up enough courage to start weaning yourself away from some of these medicines that are making you miserable, as they did for my family and my parents as they got old, and they will for yours as well. And if you're mixed up in all of this and you're just confused, well, try to learn one thing at a time. Don't try to do everything at one time, and maybe you'll find a better way. We hope you do, and you can visit my website, Knowledge of Health. There are many other good sources. Trying to find information out about so many sources, you get confused. We're trying to sort it out for you. KnowledgeofHealth.com, and the information is well-priced. It's free.
All right, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. That's 464-8295. If you're out there in the listening audience and like to talk to Bill, but, you know, there are so many people who do, as you get older, get an irregular heartbeat. Your heart becomes more irritable, and it begins to fire off, and then you begin to get skip beats, and this is why. Or, of course, you get the heart irritability, and then you'll get the tachycardia situation where either the heart is in fibrillation or in flutter or just going very rapidly. And the magnesium seems to help that, as does the fish oil. And these are things that people really don't think about. Well, let's go to Mike, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Yeah, hi, Stan. Excuse me. I've lost my voice all of a sudden. Earlier in the program, Bill was talking about cloning and what if people would clone themselves. I wanted to mention an article in a gay magazine called Attitude Magazine. It touts itself as the premier gay magazine in the United Kingdom. And they had an article. This is a February 1999 issue called Clone Your Own Boyfriend.
Well, that's pretty sick, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, for £100,000, apparently, if you went to the company named Clonaid, you could have your boyfriend made to order whatever you want, any physical, emotional, psycho-spiritual features. This article goes into some pretty interesting detail.
What is that thing that they say, you know, fool and his money are soon parted? How would you respond to that, Bill?
This is actually sadly true, because the professor, the disgraced professor at Seoul University in Korea, has now just been reinstated to do human cloning research. And he's doing this for what we're just exactly saying here, is they're going to make a clone human of you, so that as you get older, you can just go grab the spare parts. What are they talking about here? Have we gone insane? I mean, and of course they're taking it to a country that has no Christian values on any of this, of course. And then they're saying, well, we better do this or we're going to lose out on all the money and the booty and all this kind of stuff. Listen, let them do it in those godless countries, not here. The Christians need to stand up, oppose this. And we need to take them on the level of fraud. We can't take them on morals, because they won't buy into that. But the fraud they're pushing at us, we can certainly attack them there. And that's what my claim is. They've misled us. They've misled even Christopher Reeve a week before he died. They will go to no end to deceive us. And we need to bring this to their attention. We need to run this back. We need to stop taking the brunt of these knives being thrown at the Christians, that they're the ones that are standing in the way of people walking again and seeing again. How dare they say that, when the Christians built most of the hospitals in the world and cared for the sick all over the planet when others wouldn't.
Amen to that. Anything else, Mike?
Well, just another piece or two on this picture of this Clonaid company that claims to be able to do this. At least this is back in 1999. They said they weren't so far away from it then. Clonaid, you might remember from about 4 years ago, the Raelians were in the news.
Right.
As being, they had this claim that they had produced the first human clone. Well, Clonaid is their little pet project. And Dr. Brigitte Boisselier is mentioned in this article as the scientific director who is speaking for the company to the person who wrote the article in this magazine.
Okay, thanks so much, Mike.
Okay.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Ray calling from Ray's calling from Santa Cruz. Ray, did you have a question or comment?
Yes, I do. The question was, wouldn't the abortion rights groups have a lot to gain with this phony stem cell research, this drive for stem cell research? It would seem that they would benefit by that, and it seems to me that also that Bill Gates and Warren Buffett are together in this birth control program, and I guess Warren Buffett funded an abortion pill not too many years ago that has killed 500,000 babies in the United States.
Well, let's get Bill's thoughts on that. I don't know anything specifically. Do you,
yeah.
Bill, do you know anything about that?
I'm not familiar with it. Maybe
it's called the RU486 abortion pill.
Well, right. Was he involved with that one?
Yes, he was involved in it. Warren Buffett was involved in it. And he's giving the bulk of his fortune to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And what they're into is they're involved in international birth control programs, which sort of means to me sort of like pro-abortion.
Well, of course, they're going to spend a lot of that money on vaccinations. This is one of the things that
try
to stamp out the childhood diseases. But the vaccinations we're giving to the children in third world countries have the mercury in them, which, of course, they've taken out of it here in the United States because they've acknowledged how much damage it can do to the brain. But we're going to give it to all the little black children throughout the rest of the world. And it not only affects the mind, it also affects their fertility. And certainly in animals, it will cause increase the incidence of abortions, but not just in this generation, in future generations of animals. And we have to wonder, is that what this is really all about? Do you have any thoughts on that, Bill?
Well, we have this morning after pill he brought up, and of course, listen, we live in a godless country now. This is going to get passed, and they tell us it's in 41 other countries, I don't know. But listen, this is a very strong birth control pill. That's what the morning after pill is, there's risk of blood clots and other things. And we're now going to be giving this to 16-year-old girls because the 18-year-olds are going to hand it down to their sisters, and this is what's going to go on. And a congressman stood up before Congress this week and in front of the FDA and said, listen, how is it that you have to go to a doctor to get a birth control pill which is far less potent than this RU486 morning after pill? How in the world could you possibly make one over-the-counter that's most dangerous and the thing that isn't as much, even though that you can get blood clots from continued use of birth control pills? But I think he brought up a good point. Are we being, fed a bill of goods? Are youngsters, going to be have the accessibility to something that they don't know how to use safely? I mean, we need to ask all these questions.
I think one of the most significant things is I remember, of course, in the 1960s or so, when a woman had a threatened abortion, they gave her a large dose of estrogen, and it would seem to prevent the miscarriage. The trouble was that her daughter and her daughter's daughter would get cancer of the vagina. Mm-hmm. And, of course, this is the great tragedy. Do we know what the long-term use of this high dose of estrogen will be? That they're maybe only going to take it one time, this week, and one time maybe next week or the week after that, because they don't want to take a chance on getting pregnant. Mm-hmm. What about their daughters? Will they get cancer of the vagina?
And if you recall,
20 years later?
Yeah, a couple of women have died due to infection of some kind related with this drug. So we're not exactly sure what's going on there. So we're moving ahead again too fast. And, we may oppose this as Christians. I don't think we're going to stop it, just like all the rest, because they're using so much deception. And they're twisting things around and making it look like the Christians are going to, cause all this trouble. So, we're getting demonized now. And that's just the way it's going to be. But that doesn't mean we have to fall for all these phony pitches that they're giving us, and so much of it is deception.
All right, thanks very much for calling,
okay,
Ray.
Thanks.
Now, we had a caller who'd called in and wanted to know how she could strengthen herself after she'd had chemotherapy for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Is there any supplement or anything else she could take?
Well, certainly. Vitamin D comes to high-dose vitamin D. We say high dose, a safe dose, 2,000 to 4,000 units. Go to the Vitamin D Council website to learn more about that. Very important for your immune system with lymphomas. And we have seen people call us and tell us taking the resveratrol pills, their lymphomas, some of these are external. You can see them shrink when you take resveratrol. We've had some reports of that and so on. So we just try to help people with this. Boost your immune system. Watch carefully about drinking milk. It's got a contaminated bug in it. We think it causes a lot of these lymphomas and so on. So stay away from dairy products.
Okay, fine. Well, our guest this evening has been Bill Sardi. His website is knowledgeofhealth.com. That's knowledgeofhealth.com or askbillsardi.com. Go there, start reading, start studying, start learning. Well, Bill, we've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
I think whether it's the issue or the debate of Darwinism and evolution in our schools and in the public, and whether the Christians think, well, you know, maybe this is the way God did it. No, he didn't do it that way. Don't fall for this. Look deeper into some of these stories that you're being fed. Science is now a god and a substitute for what our real God was in the past, but only a false god. Only a temporary God based on shifting sands. And so many people have put their faith in science rather than God. And we came from God. We were created by God. We were not created by science. Science is a study, and it's a flawed study because humans run it. And, of course, now we see so much a deceitful science. And so don't you fall for this. And certainly we can use our brains. We don't want to be airheads. But we don't want to fall. Listen, don't let them sell you the Brooklyn Bridge, and that's what you're getting when you're getting these vaccines, when you're getting talked to about stem cell technology, Darwinian evolution, and the line. The list just goes on and on. So for all of you listening to Radio Liberty, stand up for what you know to be true. If you're confused and you don't know, then bring that up to Dr. Stan. Let us study these issues so we can help you find the way. And maybe sometimes it does take a little bit of investigation. But by and large, I can tell you, you can tell what the problem is from where it's coming from. And I can tell you a lot of these things that we hear about are coming from commercial interests and so on. And we know, of course, that this is just, we can almost tell you exactly what really goes on here in all of these things. So it's predictable. We live in a sinful world. We live in a world with no moral compass. But we can be a light under that world, and of course, to call attention and to take to task those who bring up this deceitful information. Don't fall for it. Keep your Bible close and God close to your heart, and keep listening to Radio Liberty. It'll be a good compass for you.
Well, thanks very much, Bill. We appreciate the plug and appreciate your being with us, and look forward to having you back with us again this next month as we explore even more of these issues having to do with health. And, of course, the thing is that people are going to have to learn, become knowledgeable, and they're going to have to look after their own health. You can't really trust it to anybody else.
No, you can't.
Good night. God bless.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, I hope you've enjoyed our interview this evening with Bill Sardi, always one of our favorite guests. And certainly, medicine has some wonderful things you can offer, but it doesn't have all the answers. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And if you're out there in the listening audience and you agree that we're involved in a spiritual battle, being played out in a political and ideological and cultural battlefield, and if you think that we have something unique to offer here, we hope that many of you give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. You can certainly join the Radio Liberty family or subscribe to the newsletter. Or if you'd like a free copy of the newsletter, why call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. I'd like to suggest the May newsletter because it deals with immigration and who's really behind the effort to create a multicultural, multilingual society in America and what their real agenda and goal is. Not only that, but who they truly worship. The May newsletter, I think, will be a shock to you. Now, you can get it on the Internet, and if you have a computer, please go there, because it's an expense for us to actually have to send the letter to you, but we will send it free of charge. If you can't find it on the Internet, at radioliberty.com, that's www.radioliberty.com. Somebody had called in and asked about how to build up your strength. After chemotherapy, we carry a wonderful book. It's called Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients. That's Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients. So many people who are going to take radiation or chemotherapy have used that book, and really they've gone through this. In fact, one of our listeners had told us that her daughter-in-law had used these techniques, and the physicians who was treating her couldn't understand why this girl's hair didn't all fall out. And she didn't tell the doctor why, but she'd been, of course, using the techniques in the book. Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients by our good friend, Dr. Russell Blaylock. And, of course, we also have his book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. We actually keep that book in my wife's library, and she certainly goes to it very frequently. We also have his book, Excitotoxins, That A Taste That Kills, and of course they are poisonous, with NutraSweet and MSG. They know that they're carcinogenic. They know the profound impact they have on the brain and producing degenerative neurological diseases and so many other things. But of course they're not going to tell you about that. The pathological obesity, the diabetes, all the complications of diabetes are made worse by the NutraSweet. And yet, of course, it's routinely prescribed by doctors who don't want you to have sugar. Well, there's so much you need to know. You need to learn about magnesium in the book of The Miracle of Magnesium by Dr. Carolyn Dean. You need to know about statin drugs. We have a book on statin drugs. You have to know about genetically modified foods, and believe me, they're every place, and that's seeds of deception. And we have 4 tape sets on magnesium and on genetically modified food and on aspartame and MSG, and we have the material. You just need to get it. We have a 4 tape set with Dr. Russell Blaylock on life-saving secrets, and we want you to get the information, and you have our permission to copy anything we have produced to get the information out. Because believe me, the life you save could well be your own or that of a loved one. So we want to remind you, we do carry the Berkey products, Big Berkey and Berkey Light. And if you're in an area with fluoridated water or any question of pesticides or herbicides in the water, you certainly want to think about getting a water filter. If you're interested, and of course you get them through us, you get a free video or 4 tape set that we have produced. That's the Berkey products, and then, of course, we do have a health catalog. We carry many of the products. Bill was talking about this evening in the way of the coenzyme Q10, the magnesium, and the fish oil. And you need to have a supply of these laid in, because, believe me, we're heading into difficult times. I believe a revolution in Mexico is very close at hand. Let me repeat that. A revolutionary movement in Mexico is very close at hand. Let's just wait and see what develops there. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision, and for our protection. And we'll be back in just a moment for the next hour of Radio Liberty. this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And we need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and, well, of course, the views of our callers as well. We ask you to hold your calls, however, until we specifically ask for them, because right now we have an old friend, Ralph Everson, and we're going to be talking about the Jewish conspiracy, this idea that there is a Jewish or Zionist conspiracy to rule the world. And, of course, you have to understand that many, many people believe this. Now, this is not to say that there isn't a conspiracy to rule the world, but both Ralph and I've known Ralph going back to about 1980, so that's almost 26 years, isn't it, Ralph?
Yeah, it was about that time, Dr. Stan.
You remember when you came up here to Santa Cruz?
Yes, I do indeed. In fact, by the way, go back. You said that was an old friend. Now, we can understand that means we've been friends a long time. I'm not old, Dr. Stan.
I know. No, neither am I.
Right. Yes, okay.
In fact, I really feel, you know, if it weren't for, you know, I'm a little stiff and difficult to get around, I feel great all most of the time, and certainly, unfortunately, my mind keeps working, and that's the most important thing.
Yes.
Anyway, there is a worldwide conspiracy which intent upon ruling the world. And there are Jewish people involved, but there are people who profess to be Catholics and people who profess to be Protestants and people who profess to be Muslims and Buddhists and Hindus. And there are people all over the world who are part of this movement towards a new world order and a new world religion. But what they have done is they've set up a straw man there, and they want you to knock him down. They want you to believe that it is the Jews or the Zionists, or call it what you will, or behind that. And Ralph called me the other day and told me he'd been giving a talk on the Jewish conspiracy. And so I said, Ralph, I want you to come onto our program. So this will be the third program we've done together. And I'm going to let him just sort of pick up. And Ralph, you don't believe in the Jewish conspiracy, is that
right? I want to put another word in there. I want to call it the bogus Jewish conspiracy. So, because I'm not in favor of this at all. In fact, it's an abomination. It's stupid. It's wrong. And we'll try to talk about as much of it as we can during the hour.
Go ahead.
This, I first heard it. Well, let's go back. I started reading, just briefly for those who might not know me, I started reading back in 1962 when I was 2 years old, Dr. Stan. My mother used to read me these books, and so I started reading in 1962, and I quickly discovered there was a conspiracy. And maybe a year later, a couple of years later, I read a booklet by Robert Welch of the Birch Society called The Neutralizers. And in there, he was quite aware there was a conspiracy. And he said he wrote this Neutralizers to show that there were people who believed it was Jewish, and it simply was not. Now, Robert Welch didn't give you much information. I don't believe as much as we know now. Of course, that's what we'll talk about. But I do believe that he was certainly he was right, and he was trying to warn us to stay away from it. The whole theory is bogus, and that's why I call it the bogus Jewish conspiracy. So I read that, and then as I continued to read, I discovered that this conspiracy is not Jewish.
But it is a conspiracy, and that's the important thing for people to understand. There's an organized, coordinated plan, and you can actually read it. It's called The Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. But the only question is, who wrote the protocols? If you read this, it is truly an evil document. I mean, I have a difficult time reading it. I have almost a sense of foreboding evil as I read this. And it lays out almost a mind comp for everything going on today. But it is also a trap, and we don't recommend that people do read it, because it is so convincing you might actually fall prey to the purpose it's there, and that is to divert you from what this is really about and cause you to hate the Jewish people. Well, go ahead. Pick up the story there, Ralph.
Okay, well, let's go with that, because that's exactly where Mr. Welch took it. He got into the theory. He first of all explained it as by quoting what he would presume someone would say if they were going to advocate it. And he said something like, there is a conspiracy, but it is Jewish, and their plan is to take over the world, control the world, and then he goes on to show up that that's just as bogus as a $1 bill. The conspiracy is not Jewish. In fact, as I continue to read, and over the last 30-some years I've been reading, 40 years now, I've proven that it's not Jewish, it's Luciferian. And that poses the real problem to those who believe that the Jews were involved. And let's go to the next step. The protocols, let's do it one more step before we do that. Let's talk about Winston Churchill. Winston Churchill was the Prime Minister of England, I guess primarily during World War II, I guess, and really shortly thereafter. And he wrote in 1920 that he saw that there was a conspiracy. And he wrote it in the Illustrated Sunday Herald, an English newspaper, on February 8, 1920. Let me read it. It's only a couple of three sentences long. From the days of Weishaupt, and I believe he's just trying to contend that Weishaupt, the founder of the Illuminati, was Jewish. So he says, from the days of Weishaupt to those of Karl Marx, who, of course, many claim was Jewish. We'll talk about that in a minute. To those of Leon Trotsky, Rosa Luxemburg, and Emma Goldman, this worldwide conspiracy has been growing. It has been the mainspring of every subversive movement during the 19th century. Now, that's essential. Let's hold it. We'll come to that in a minute. And now this band of extraordinary personalities has gripped the Russian people. Now, by the way, he did point out that it was in the cities of Europe and America, so it was not in Israel or Switzerland. It was in America and Europe. Now, Weishaupt might have been a Jew, but Weishaupt became a Luciferian. He was out to destroy Christianity. He wrote that. So my question is this. Oh, let's go back to Karl Marx. Karl Marx was born Jewish. His father was a Jew and his mother was Jewish. And his father became some sort of government official. And I guess for whatever reasons, he felt it was important to become a Christian. So he became a Christian. And apparently got Karl Marx to become a Christian, and Marx was actually baptized. So Karl Marx left Judaism to become a Christian, and then when he went to college, he changed again. He went to some university in Germany, and there he became a member, an advocate, a disciple of a woman by the name of Joanna Southcott, who claimed to be
Hold that thought right there, Ralph. Yeah. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, our guest this evening is Ralph Epperson, an old friend. And Ralph was saying that really the foundation for much of the anti-Semitism that exists today was an article that was written in 1920 by Winston Churchill. And I can remember 40-some years ago when somebody came to me to reveal the real conspiracy, the Jewish conspiracy, and based that upon this article written by Winston Churchill, who said that, you know, this was a Zionist conspiracy, the Zionists were behind communism, and referred back to, from the time of Weishaupt and Spartacus through Lenin, through Emma Goldman, and through Trotsky, and these were all Jewish people. And he was saying that they were the basis of the Bolshevik Revolution, and they were the basis of this worldwide Zionist movement, worldwide communist movement. It was all came from the Zionists. So that was that. Many people read that and said, "Well, if Winston Churchill said it was good, that really must be true." But of course, nobody's ever asked why Winston Churchill was never attacked by the Zionists for saying that. And it is simply because within the Zionist movement, there are many people who are part of this Luciferian movement, and Winston Churchill was doing exactly what he was supposed to do. He was pointing at the Jews as being, or the Zionists as being behind this worldwide communist movement, where it is really this Luciferian movement that Ralph talks about. So pick up the story there, Ralph.
Yeah, that's good, Dr. Stan. First of all, let's talk about what Zionism is, and it's defined as a desire of the Jews to relocate or reassemble or regather in Israel, or the area around Israel, the promised land. And so that was accomplished in 1948, so there's no more reason to have a Zionist movement anymore. So if this was a movement by the Zionists, this conspiracy, then it's over. They're through. They've got what they wanted, so there's no reason to be in existence. And also, by the way, there are a lot of Christian pastors who are Zionists because they believe, or at least were Zionists, because they believe that the Bible prophesies that the Jews would regather in Israel. So once that's accomplished, it's over. The Zionists can fold a tent and go home. So, but the key is going back to Karl Marx. When Marx went to college, he learned about the evils of Christianity. Before he went to college, he wrote books, and not books, I guess pamphlets and writings and letters or something, praising Jesus, acknowledging him as good and the beneficiary of mankind, blessings, etc. But when he went to college, he became a Luciferian, a Satanist. And Karl Marx, one of the great portraits of him that a lot of people use when they document the picture of Karl Marx, he's giving a sign with his right hand that shows he's been born again to Lucifer. So even if Marx was a Jew and became a Christian just for his father or whatever, if you become a Luciferian and you're Jewish, are you still Jewish? And of course not. You've got to renounce Judaism unless you believe that the Jews all believe in Lucifer. And that certainly is not the case. So that the key is Karl Marx and also others, Lenin and others. Karl Marx became was a Jew, became a Catholic, a Christian, and then became a Luciferian. So how could he still be Jewish? So this theory that these people are Zionists, they've got what they wanted, plus if they're Jews and if they're in a conspiracy, they've got to renounce Judaism to become a Luciferian. So they're not Jews anymore. Now, by the way, Jewish is not a race, it's a religion. And one of the ways you can prove that is go back to 1976. Henry Kissinger, our former Secretary of State, I believe he's still alive. He was back, in the Nixon years, I guess?
Oh, yeah. Henry's alive and well and doing all sorts of evil things.
Yeah. Well, Henry Kissinger has been excommunicated from the Jewish faith. They have a five-man American rabbinic council that meets to examine the credentials of some Jews when they find out there's some objectionable material or statements they've made. And they gave him what is called a cherum, something like that, C-H-E-R-U-M, that means that he's no longer a Jew. He's been kicked out of the faith. Well, if they can kick you out, then it's not a race. So that means that once you become a Jew, you're supposed to continue believing in the Jewish faith. And if you leave, you're kicked out, or you remove yourself by becoming a Luciferian. Then the next point is that Winston Churchill pointed out that that Lenin was also Jewish, which is certainly open to dispute. A lot of people don't believe he was, but even if he was, he too became a Luciferian, and there's a photograph of him giving a sign with his right hand that he's been born again to Lucifer. Now, secondly, so if Lenin was Jewish, how could you become a Luciferian and still be a Jew? It doesn't make sense. So now, let's talk about the protocols, Dr. Stan. This is heavy, but we got to get into them because that's one of the bases of the whole theory that they're Jews that behind this conspiracy. Let's go back to 1920 and go back to the history of Henry Ford, the automobile maker. Of course, he's now gone. But Henry Ford, who made all those the Ford automobile and became one of the wealthiest men in the world, Henry Ford never borrowed money from the bankers. And, of course, they thought that was an anathema to them. They had to force him into borrowing, so they created the nationwide crash in the United States of 1920 to bankrupt Henry Ford, or at least force him into borrowing money. And he refused to do it. So Henry Ford then tried to define, well, why would they do this to me? I'm a nice guy. Well, that's maybe simplified. But someone must have told him, and I don't know who, as far as I know, he's never said, but Henry Ford apparently heard someone say they're Jews. And they're not only Jews, they're international bankers. And I guess someone gave him the protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion to read. So Henry Ford read them and believed the protocols and bought the Dearborn, Michigan Independent newspaper as a way of promoting his evidence, as he called it, that there were Jews and that they were causing all the wars of the world. Now, bringing that up to date, then we'll go back to the protocols. Mel Gibson, the actor, just got arrested about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and when he did, he apparently was drinking too heavily, and he started accusing the policemen of being a Jew, and that there was a Jewish conspiracy, and they were Jewish bankers, and they were out to control the world, and they caused all the wars of the world. That's exactly what Henry Ford said in 1920, and both of these men are wrong. Now let's get into the protocols.
I think that Henry Ford wrote a book called The International Jew, and I'll never forget, 42 or 43 years ago, some woman came to my medical office, and she had a copy of that in a brown paper bag, and she very surreptitiously slid it across the desk for me to have, telling me that her life could be in danger for giving it out, and mine could be in danger for having it, but it certainly gave it sort of that aura of authenticity. This is the secret. It's the international bankers behind everything. The trouble is that an awful lot of the international bankers are not Jewish, but that doesn't really matter. If you have this fixed in your mind, you're going to have a hard time getting it unfixed, because there's so much evidence that has been intentionally planted to mislead you away. And, of course, then that takes us into the protocols of the learned elders of Zion. Pick the story up there, Rob.
Yeah, now, first of all, notice what they're called. The protocols are called the protocols of the learned elders of Zion, as you just pointed out. And we just defined the word Zion, or Zionism, as meaning a desire of the Jews, or the world in essence, to give the Jews a homeland after they've been scattered so many times and persecuted. So that's what they did in 1948. So if these were the Zionists, they got what they wanted. So the case is over. No, not at all. And I'm like you, Dr. Stan. Those protocols are one of the scariest things I've ever read, because it's like reading today's newspaper. But I'll be honest with you, Dr. Stan, I don't know who wrote them. I don't know anyone that does know. I've heard a lot of theories. But there is some interesting stuff we've got to talk about. The man who found them, by the name of Nihlus, Sergei Nihlus, something like that. And Nihlus had no proof that this meeting in Basel, Switzerland in 1897 was ever held. He just said it. Secondly, he had no proof that it was the Jews that wrote it. So whether he wrote it or not, I don't know. There are some people who claim it's a repeat of a similar of a discussion with what Machiavelli had with Lucifer or Satan or something. I don't know, some sort of papers written maybe 50 or 100 years before. I don't know. I've never checked that out. But in any event, he offered no evidence that it was either the Jews or that the meeting had ever taken place, nor did he tell us how he found the papers, how we got came into his possession. So now, the protocols caused Henry Ford to believe that they were Jews that had caused the crash in 1920, and that they had caused all the wars of the past. So he decided to do his work about convincing the American people that there was something going on. Now, Henry Ford then heard about a man by the name of Adolf Hitler, who was coming to power in Germany in 1933, and he was promising to do something about the Jews and also the international bankers. So Henry Ford decided to, quote, lend him his support, unquote. That's what Sutton will talk about that in a minute. So Henry Ford decided to help Adolf Hitler come to power because he was going to expose the Jewish bankers. And there's a picture that I've got, it's in the New York Times, of Henry Ford getting an award, some sort of sash and a medal, I guess, from the German Hitler's government in 1938, plus or minus a matter of months from when the war started. So Henry Ford was so proud of this, he actually posed for a photograph that you can see, and I've got it in my video. I hear the music again.
Go right ahead, I'll tell you when to stop.
Okay. So then Henry Ford decided to support Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler, as you know, the world's contending that Adolf Hitler created a huge Jewish, anti-Jewish conspiracy. So if the Jews were behind Adolf Hitler, it seems to be very strange that they would allow him to do this to their fellow Jews, but that's what they claim would happen. Sutton also pointed out that Lenin, after Lenin took over, created what he called a pogrom. P-O-G-R-O-M, pogrom.
Pogrom,
okay, that's
pogrom.
Fine.
Pogrom,
okay. A pogrom that killed and persecuted Jews in Russia.
Hold that thought. All right, this is Dr. Stan, and Ralph is telling us about this origin of the anti-Jewish or the anti-Semitic program that began in Russia in 1905 when somebody found a copy of the protocols, the learned hills of Zion, and gave it to the secret police there and gave it to the Tsar. And because the Tsar read this and believed then, of course, there was tremendous foment in his country, the socialist revolution that already had a socialist revolution in 1905, and now he knew who was behind it. It was the Jews. So then he allowed the pogroms to go ahead there. In other words, persecution of Jews and burning of their villages and many times killing of the people there. And this is what I think Fiddler on the Roof is all about, is some of the persecution that took place in Russia during that era, all based upon this document, the protocols. So pick up the story, Ralph.
Yeah, that's correct. Lenin started it, but I'll tell you, Stalin really made it far worse, the pogrom. Stalin came to power when Lenin, I believe Lenin was poisoned, but I don't know who did it, but anyway, he died only 3 or 4 years after the revolution of 1917, maybe 23 or something like that, I don't remember, 26, something like that. He died, and Stalin took over, and Stalin ran the Russian government for 26 years. Now, here's the question. If there was a Jewish conspiracy that installed Lenin, after Lenin's death, why would they allow Stalin to come to power? Why didn't they take him out? And Lenin and Stalin both purged all of the Jewish members of the Presidium, or the, what do they call their government, Politburo Presidium.
Politburo.
They purged them. They killed them. They exterminated them by the hundreds. So they were wiped out. That's why the Jews were, in essence, over after the Lenin government. And maybe if not him, then Stalin certainly continued it. Now, that doesn't make sense. Stalin ran the most anti-Jew pogrom in the history of the world, and yet he was allowed to stay in power by a Jewish conspiracy of huge, powerfully endowed Jewish bankers. That doesn't make sense.
Well, I think, of course, if you read the book Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution by Professor Sutton, you'll find out that it was American financiers, in large part, who were financing the establishment of Bolshevism in Russia. And in a similar matter, we have a book called A British Agent by Bruce Lockhart, who was actually sent to Russia by Lord Milner, who was, of course, running Cecil Rhodes' secret society in 1918. And Bruce Lockhart was there with an American, and I believe his name was Fred Thompson.
Yes,
and he was an agent of the gentleman who came from the Federal Reserve Bank. And this man had given $1 million to Russia at that time. That was a lot of money at that time, probably equivalent to $100 million today. And Lenin always went to the American and to him, Bruce Lockhart, for advice. And he didn't understand why would Lenin be coming to them to get advice on what he was supposed to do.
Yeah.
It was almost as if the men they represented controlled Lenin. A fascinating book. The book is entitled British Agent by Bruce Lockhart. And, of course, I quote that in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. Go ahead.
Okay, let's go back now to Sutton, because he wrote a book called Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution. And, by the way, many of the people who believe in the Jewish conspiracy have used his book, Sutton, because Sutton's research is impeccable. This man, in fact, he's my all-time hero. I only talked to him once on the phone. I think I met him once maybe before on the circuit. But anyway, he wrote a book, and in the back of the book, he's got a section, something about the Bolshevik Revolution, the Jewish conspiracy theory of the Bolshevik Revolution. It took 4 pages. Here's what he wrote. It's very brief. There is an existence.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess it's Ralph Everson. He's talking about, of course, Professor Sutton's impression of this idea that there was a Jewish conspiracy. And certainly I've been pointing out that certainly if you read the book my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and we simply quote a book by Bruce Lockhart, who was in Russia in 1919 as a representative of Lord Milner, who headed the secret society that Cecil Rhodes had created. And, of course, he mentioned that both he and a man named Raymond Robbins were in Moscow. Raymond Robbins represented William Boyce Thompson of the Federal Reserve Bank in New York City. And Lenin was very obsequious and certainly looked to both Bruce Lockhart and Raymond Robbins for direction and the major decisions of the Communist Party during its formative years were made by Robbins and Bruce Lockhart. And Bruce Lockhart really didn't understand what this was all about, and he remarked on several occasions, why would Lenin be coming to us, to me, for advice? I mean, I'm just here representing Lord Milner. He didn't really understand the conspiracy behind the conspiracy. So pick the story up there, Rob.
Yeah, let's go with what Dr. Sutton said in the back of his book, Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution. He's probably 6 or 8 sentences. There is an extensive literature reflecting the argument that the Bolshevik Revolution, that's the Communist Revolution of 1917 to about 23 or so, the Bolshevik Revolution was the result of a Jewish conspiracy. More specifically, a conspiracy of Jewish world bankers. Generally, world control is seen as the ultimate objective. And then he talks about Winston Churchill. We've already talked about that, where Winston Churchill claimed that it was a Jewish conspiracy. By the way, and I made a comment when I was reading it originally, he talked about it was the mainspring of every subversive movement during the 19th century. Wait a minute. What was it doing between zero and 19th century? Was it doing nothing? That's the question I ask of those who believe in the protocols. If the Jews have been on the earth for several thousand years, why did they wait until 1897 to work on a program to take over the world? That makes sense. Is that when it started? If it started in 1897, then it's not much of a Jewish conspiracy. Okay, let's go back now to Anthony Sutton. He, meaning Churchill, asserts, contrary to the fact, that with the exception of Lenin, the majority of the leading figures in the revolution were Jewish, and adds, also contrary to the fact, that in many cases Jewish interests and Jewish places of interest, of worship rather, Jewish places of worship, were accepted by the Bolsheviks from their policies of seizure. And then he goes on to point out that the people who love this Jewish conspiracy theory got some lists of the Bolsheviks who took over the Russian government after the Tsar and his family left. And he quotes a man by the name of Henry Steed, who was a perennial supporter of this, some sort of government document in the State Department. And they look at the list, and there's a lot of Jewish-sounding names. And, of course, that means that if you've got a Jewish-sounding name, you must be Jewish. Now, I live in Arizona, and we have quite a heavy Mexican-American population here because we're so close to the nation of Mexico. And I have friends of mine who have Mexican-sounding names, but they're Caucasians. But when they were going to college or maybe in high school, they were counted as, they'd go through the list and say all the Garcias and all the Martinezes, they're all Mexicans. And even if you're not a Mexican, you're counted as Mexican as your name is. So just the fact that they're Mexican or Jewish-sounding names, to me, doesn't mean anything. There's been no effort that I know of by anyone who supports this Jewish conspiracy to prove that these men were synagogue-attending Jews. They just say the name sounded Jewish, so they must be. And that's what he's pointing out. Sutton continued, however, none of the above statements can be supported with hard empirical evidence. There is no concrete evidence that Jews were involved in the Bolshevik Revolution because they were Jewish. The evidence suggests that the New York bankers, who were the people who loaned money to Lenin, were also Jews, had relatively minor roles in supporting the Bolsheviks, while the New York bankers, who were also Gentiles, had major roles. In other words, we've got it all wrong. The Gentiles, it's an anti-Gentile conspiracy because they gave more money and loaned more money than the Jews did.
But, of course, what you have to do is you've got to focus the attention on somebody else, or people might begin to understand what this is all about. It is a conspiracy against Christianity. It is a conspiracy against Judaism. It's a conspiracy against God. When you understand there's a Luciferian conspiracy, then, of course, the things that are laid out in the Mein Kampf, which is the protocols of Lord Adela's design, really begin to make sense. And you will begin to understand that this whole thing has been set up as a straw man so they can knock it down. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and our guest is Ralph Epperson. Pick up the story up there, Ralph.
Yeah, let's finish now with the quote by Professor Sutton, because he's now going to explain why he believes this these people believe in the Jewish conspiracy. He said what the motives are, not so much why they believe, because we just examined the fact that it's bogus. But let's now find out why. Why are there people promoting this thing? And here's what he said. The persistence with which the Jewish conspiracy myth, notice he's calling it a myth, has been pushed, suggests that it may well be a deliberate device to divert the attention from the real issues and the real causes. What better way to divert attention from the real operators than by the boogeyman of anti-Semitism? End of quote. Bingo, we just got it. That's what this thing is all about. And I've been fighting this thing for probably since I started my lecturing tour in 1985. I toured the country for 3 years, part-time. I spoke like 2 or 3 months and then took a couple of months off. But I toured the country, and during that tour, oftentimes I'd get someone to stand up and say, Mr. Epperson, I really appreciate when I was touring, it was always open. People could always stand up and get a microphone and ask questions. So this question was, Mr. Epperson, I really enjoyed what you had to say. You did a great job of documenting this thing, and it was an excellent presentation, but you missed something. And I said, as soon as they said that, I knew what was coming. And I said, well, what did I miss? I said, oh, you missed the fact that there was a Jewish conspiracy. And boy, I did everything within my power to show, the reason I let him say it, because I wanted to show the people that were in attendance that this theory is bogus, it's false, it's wrong. And I've been doing that since 1985. Well, I want to be honest with you, Dr. Stan. I'm tired of this. I think some of these people are doing this intentionally. They're diverting the attention from the real conspirators. Now, that's the last question let's talk about. Who are the real conspirators? And I want to use probably one of the best books on the subject of who they are was written by someone who knew who they were, I believe, named Alice Bailey. And I like the way you described it, Dr. Stan. Why don't you tell your listeners who Alice Bailey was?
Well, that's because I asked you this morning who Alice Bailey was.
Well,
Alice Bailey was a woman who lived during the early years of the 20th century, and she died, I think, about 1955, somewhere in there. But she was a disciple of Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, the founder of Theosophy. And these people were Luciferians, and Alice Bailey wrote a number of books, somewhere between 21 and 25 books, but she didn't write them. They were channeled to her by a demonic spirit, a spirit known as Joachul, and we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Ralph Epperson, and of course the question that comes up is, who is this conspiracy that we talk about? And Ralph is going to tell you who knows what this conspiracy is about. And he had mentioned Alice Bailey and asked me to tell our listeners who Alice Bailey was. We have a wonderful little book called The ABCs of Globalism that, if you don't have a copy of it, you should have it, because it has all of this information in it. But Alice Bailey was born probably in the end of the 19th century, and she lived up until about 1947 to 1955. She died about that time. Her husband was Foster Bailey, who was a high-ranking Mason. Alice was a Luciferian. She was a disciple of Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, and she, of course, was the head of something known as the Lucius Trust. That is actually the Lucifer Trust. Some of the most powerful and wealthy men in the world belong to the Lucius Trust, which has offices in New York City. Used to be at number one United Nations Plaza, but it's moved away from there. But they're the major force behind the United Nations and the United Nations prayer room there in the United Nations building. They have offices in London. They have offices in Geneva. Fabulously wealthy, very efficient organization. Alice Bailey wrote between 21 and 26, 7 books. I can't remember exactly how many. But they were actually channeled to her by a demonic spirit she called Joachul, in which she laid out, of course, all the precepts that were being used by the world occult or world Luciferian movement as it exists today. And after she wrote her last book, which was The Externalization of the Hierarchy, then, of course, she was allowed to die and go to her just reward. which of course is eternity in hell, because she was the Luciferian. She worshipped Lucifer, but she understood this. And now, with that as a background, Ralph, you pack up the story and
thank
tell us what Alice Bailey said.
I want to quote from that book, The Externalization of the Hierarchy, because that's where she tells us who these people, not by name, but by groups or whatever. We'll read it together. Quote, the three main channels through which the preparation is going on, the preparation for the New World Order, the New Age, might be regarded as the church, and here she's referring to the Christian church, the broad spectrum Christian church, Christianity, the Masonic fraternity, and the educational field. Now notice, there's not one mention of the Jews. So they're not, it's the church, the Christian church, the Masonic fraternity, and the educational field. The Masonic movement will meet the need of those who can and should wield power. So it's not the Jews, it's the Masons who are going to wield power. Manly P. Hall, another one of these Luciferians, who wrote, in fact, he just died, four, five, six, 7 years ago, something like that. He was a very supportive writer of this Jewish, of this Luciferian conspiracy. And he wrote that there was a group called the Order of the Quest came to America back around the time of the Pilgrims and the Puritans in the 1600s. And they were the ones that took over, started the process of taking over America. It wasn't the Jews. So once again, another expert in the Masonic fraternity, according to Alice Bailey, these are the people who are going to wield power. They are, he was telling that the thing goes back to at least the 1600s in America, where they started to take over the United States way back even then. And the way we know that they tried to take it over is in the Great Seal of the United States. Those two circles are covered with Luciferian symbolism and hidden signs and symbols. And in fact, one of the ways you can know that is the Novus Ordo Seclorum on the bottom means New World Order. We were announcing the birth of the New World Order back in 1787 when they designed the Great Seal of the United States, those two circles. So I'm trying to point out that this conspiracy is Luciferian. And the evidence that it is overwhelming. It's just, I've been studying this thing for 40 years, and the books you can read about that are mostly written by those who are in support of it with the proper credentials. You can confirm it's Luciferian. So anyone that joins it, be they Christian, Buddhist, Hindu, Jew, whatever, they've got to renounce their faith to accept Lucifer as God. Now, I've been writing books about the Masons. In fact, my third book called Masonry Conspiracy Against Christianity proves in their own rituals at the 30th degree, the Mason takes a vow with a sword in his hand to destroy Christianity. It's a vow. He takes it. Now, it's not directly stated because Pike wrote, if you reflect, my brother, you shall no doubt suspect that some secret teaching was contained in these words. But he says that at the 30th degree, where this is rituals contained about the sword and the oath, you will learn the, quote, true purpose of Masonry. So the true purpose of Masonry is the destruction of Christianity. By the way, Dr. Stan, I'm going to send this to you. I want you to see this. Now, you can use it any way you want to. But I found an article in the 1988, or a December 1988 copy of the New Age magazine, which was the magazine, at that time it was called the New Age, published by the 33rd Degree Council of the Masons in Washington, D.C. And I don't know how I found it, Dr. Stan. I never was a Mason, never joined the Masons, never got out of the Masons, never wanted to be a Mason. But I used to go to the used bookstores and buy whatever I could about the Masons. And a couple of times I'd find three or four or five, six copies of the New Age, purely at random. And in one of those, in 1988 that I had, there's an article about the 14th degree ring. And the 14th degree ring is a ring given to the Masons at the 14th degree. He can go on to 32 degrees if he wishes. In fact, if he goes through the 32nd, he has to go through the 14th degree. But at the 14th degree, he puts on a wedding ring, and I've got a picture of it, published by McCoy, and McCoy sells paraphernalia, rings, etc., hats, you name it, everything for the Masons. And it's a strictly a wedding ring. It's called a wedding ring, and you put it on at the 14th degree, and you marry Lucifer, the devil.
But, of course, the average Mason has no idea what this is really about. He is being allured into this, always being told he's going to learn the secret. There's this great power that's there when he gets to the secret. He's going to get ahead in the world. But they never come right out and tell him. And yet, if you understand what this is about, and you understand that this is a Luciferian religion, and that as you read Morals and Dogma, Albert Pike's classic book that was published in 1871, you learn that there are several gods. There's not the one God. There are several gods. And, of course, this ties into the ancient mystery religions, and modern-day Masonry is simply a manifestation of the ancient mystery religions. And who is the god of the ancient mystery religions? It was Lucifer, of course.
That's correct. By the way, there's a reason that I believe the wedding band is put on the finger at the 14th degree. And maybe I got a minute, I might be able to explain that. The Mason, when he joins, goes through the Blue Lodge, which is 3 degrees. Now, many of you maybe are Masons who are listening, and you know the Blue Lodge consists of only 3 degrees, 3 rituals, and when you're finished, you're called a Master Mason. And you could stop there. You don't have to go on, but if you wish to, you can go on to the 32nd degree in the Scottish Rite, which is 29 more for a total of 32. Now, at the first degree, you are brought, according to Pike's own books on the rituals, the ritual of all 33 degrees has been written down by Albert Pike. You can read them yourselves, and they were the official rituals written in 1871. And in the first degree, the initiate is brought before, I call him the president, just to make sure. This is the leader of the group and the Masons. And the Mason asks the vice president, who brings you up there, the initiate, and he says, "What do you ask for this initiate?" And the man says, "Light." Just the word light. One word, light. That's it. In the second degree, the same question is asked. The vice president says, "More light," in response to the question. In third degree, it happens again, and the Mason is told he's looking for further light. That's it. Light, more light, further light. Now, at the end of the third degree, the only way that you learn what light is there's a statement made that light represents the true knowledge of deity, the true knowledge of deity, which means obviously you find it in the Masons. You don't find it in the Bible. You don't find it in your church. You don't find it in your synagogue. You find it in Masonry. The true knowledge. In other words, it's almost as if he's saying that those who go to churches and synagogues have the false knowledge of deity and will tell you the real truth, the real knowledge of deity. So then, you can stop right there. That's all you do. And you'll never learn what the light is. But when you get through, if you went on to the 32nd degree, after the 14th degree, you were given the book entitled Morals and Dogma, written by Albert Pike. And that book was given out to every 14th degree Mason, and in there you're encouraged to read it. And in the explanation for the 14th degree, each one of, there's 32 chapters in the book, and each one of the chapters is on one of the degrees, one of the rituals. So in the 14th degree, this quote that I've got it memorized, and probably you do too as well, Dr. Stan, it's very simple. I have to admit I'm deleting a couple of sentences which aren't pertinent, because it says very simply, "Lucifer the light bearer, is it he who bears the light? Doubt it not." Now obviously, if Lucifer is the god of the Masons who brings you the light, they can't say it directly. They can't say, "Oh, by the way, remember during the rituals we told you about light, and now we're going to tell you where the light comes from." You are supposed to link that together. So you now link that the light comes from Lucifer. Lucifer's the light bearer, doubt it not. And then you are then to remember the statement that you are to learn the true knowledge of deity in the 14th degree. So now, in the third degree, so you now link all three statements. Number one, the Mason asks for light. Number two, in the 14th degree, he learns that the light is the Lucifer is the light bearer. In step number three, he then learns the true knowledge of deity. He's supposed to conclude on his own that Lucifer is the god of the Masons. And then he's asked to put a wedding band on. And the article that I have points out, it can't say it directly, that it's a wedding ring, it's a marriage ceremony. So what are you supposed to conclude? You're supposed to conclude that you have just married Lucifer, the devil. And that's scary, but unfortunately, it's based on Masonic rituals. Now, if someone wants to call me or get in touch with me, can I get my phone number, Dr. Stan?
You go right ahead. Let's get your phone number and your website out, Ralph.
Well, if you want to write this down, people, I have an 800 number. If you want to call me, I'll pay for the call. Call me to criticize me, be critical, I'll read you the documentation. Or if you want to see the documentation about the wedding ring, call me. I'll send you a copy of it. You can see the article yourself.
Well, let me just comment. Ralph has a wonderful, wonderful book he sends out. It's called A Book Review of Morals and Dogma. And if you don't have it, you need to get it. You need to get Morals and Dogma. You read it. And you want to read that with the book review, which will tell you where you should look for things. And it will certainly, you'll begin to understand what we're really up against. So get your website out, get your telephone number a couple of times. I hope every one of our listeners will get the free syllabus that you offer, the book review of Morals and Dogma. I think it's so important.
92 pages. I don't charge for it. It's free. I'll even spend the postage paid. I'll pay for the postage. Call me and ask one or go to my website. Let me do it first, the phone number, 800-422-3888. 800-422-3888. That rings in my home, so don't call tonight, but tomorrow during business hours or anytime over the weekend, whatever, call me. Let's talk. Secondly, my website is Ralph, R-A-L-P-H, and then there's a dash, R-A-L-P-H dash, and then Epperson, E-P-P, two P's, E-P-P-E-R-S-O-N. .com, RalphEpperson.com. And that gives you my phone number in case you didn't write it down, or it gives you my address, email address, whatever. You want to talk to me, let's talk. Okay, now, we are learning that this conspiracy is Luciferian. So if you're a Christian and you're in there, you've renounced your faith in Christ. And one of the ways you can know that as well is in Morals and Dogma. The Bible teaches that Jesus created the universe out of nothing. Jesus created the universe out of nothing as part of the Trinity, his Father. He and his Father created the universe out of nothing. Quote, Genesis 1:1, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, period. That's it. End of discussion. Now, Albert Pike wrote in Morals and Dogma, I cite the page, you can read it yourself, that to believe that the universe was created out of nothing is to believe a monstrous absurdity. Jesus Christ is a monstrous absurdity. Notice, that's what you're taught in Morals and Dogma. Now, if you're a Christian listening today, I would urge you to find out if I'm telling the truth. And if I am, then I would urge you to come out, to admit, because you are in a Luciferian cult where you married Lucifer at the 14th degree if you went on to 32 degrees. At the 30th degree, you took a vow. Maybe you didn't hear it or see it. But you took a vow to destroy Christianity. All of the books that I'm reading, again, Liturgy, Legenda, Magnum Opus, all these books written, Morals and Dogma, all written by Pike, point out that Lucifer is your God. Not the God of the Bible, Lucifer is. That means there's something going on. And notice, it's got nothing to do with Jews because this conspiracy is 6,000 years old. That predates protocols by what, 4,000, 3,000 years. The protocols were written in 1897, let's say the year 2000, just to make it simple, and the conspiracy's been there since the year zero, if you want to, 4,000 BC, so it's been 5,000 to 6,000 years. And suddenly in 1897, we're told the Jews decided to get together at a meeting and decide to take over the world after being on this earth for thousands of years already. I just find that almost too hard to believe. In fact, I believe it's so bogus, I call it the bogus Jewish conspiracy.
All right, fine. Well, it's certainly, I think it's so important that people understand that this is a lie. It is certainly being pushed, and there is so much evidence to support it. And I believe that they have actually planted Jewish people into key positions very, very specifically to give you the impression it's a Jewish conspiracy. It is a Luciferian conspiracy that is intent upon throwing people off the track. It is a part of a conspiracy against God that actually is described many times in the scriptures. It's as old as time and as modern as tomorrow's sunrise. Well, Ralph will be back here in just a moment with Ralph Everson to wrap up the program. Ralph, one more time, your telephone number and website.
800-422-3888 and ralph-epperson.com.
And if you're going to want to get something from Ralph, he's not a wealthy man. He's dedicated his life to trying to get the truth out, as have I. And if you can help him, why, we certainly support Ralph. We support his efforts. So one reason we have him on here. And so that we can expose you to him. And hopefully, you know, you want to get his material. He's got some great material there. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, Ralph, go ahead. You've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Okay. Well, thanks very much, Dr. Stan. Well, I think we've done it. I think we've tried to explain that this theory of Mel Gibson and Henry Ford and those that believe in the Jewish conspiracy are simply false. This thing is older, bigger, more extensive. It's involved in far more detail, in far more direction than we can imagine. And if I may, just maybe in a couple of minutes, let's wrap up. Who is at the top of this thing? And I believe it's called the Great White Brotherhood. The evidence so far is sketchy, but I'm looking into this, and every time I turn around, there's more evidence that the top layer of this whole thing is called the Great White Brotherhood. And by the way, I was just told yesterday or today, I guess it was, that the latest Batman movie apparently gets back into the history of the Batman, the man who became Batman, or, you know, assume the identity or whoever puts the outfit on, apparently went to Tibet and was asked by a secret society to join them, and he would have worldwide power. And according to the movie, he turned him down, and he came back to America to fight this evil called the conspiracy. Now, why he chose to go to Tibet is, I believe, is a way of telling us that that's where this headquarters is. If it's in Tibet, it's not in Israel. It's not in London, not in New York City, not Paris, not France, not Topeka, Kansas, and certainly not here in Tucson, Arizona.
Of course, this was the ideas put out by Alina Petrovna Blavatsky. This whole movement, this occult movement, really began in Tibet. In fact, she even claimed that she'd been there, and that's why Adolf Hitler spent archaeological expeditions to Tibet to find, of course, this origin of the Aryan super race.
Yes, that's correct. In fact, I was just watching a documentary the other night. I had the sound off, but the pictures, and I recorded. I haven't watched it yet. But right in the very beginning, they start talking about the Tibetan, the Dalai Lama, and the next picture they showed was a bunch of German troops, soldiers back in World War II marching. So I gather they're trying to point out that Hitler did send, I think it was Himmler?
Himmler, right.
Himmler to Tibet to find out... I believe that the Great White Brotherhood meant white, meaning Aryan, the Aryan race. And I think he found out that it doesn't mean that at all. It means white as in light. All color is together in simple color of light. White.
Well, maybe one evening we can do a program on the Great White Brotherhood, the Ascended Masters, the Elder Brothers. But I do not believe, of course, that they are necessarily human beings. I believe they're spiritual beings. But that's for another evening, Ralph. God bless you. Thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure, Dr. Stan. Thank you, and God bless you.
Bye-bye. All right. Well, I hope you enjoyed our program here with Ralph Everson. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and for those of you out there in the listening audience who'd like to know more about the Great White Brotherhood that Ralph speaks of, we at least allude to that and give you some information on it in my three pamphlets entitled The Occult Hierarchy. That's The Occult Hierarchy. There are three pamphlets, compilation of our newsletters. Now you can go up on our website at RadioLiberty.com and go through them all and pull them down and copy them. Or of course, if you'd like to get them in pamphlet form, and it's really so convenient. I like to have them in pamphlet form. That's why we put them together, and they're inexpensive. It's called The Occult Hierarchy. There are three pamphlets, and you'll be introduced to the Great White Brotherhood, the Ascended Masters, the Elder Brothers. And, of course, there really are people who believe there is a Luciferian conspiracy led by the Great White Brotherhood. These were the teachings of Helena Petrovna Blavatsky. These were the teachings of Alice Bailey. And these are the teachings of the Lucius Trust today. And some of the most powerful and wealthiest men in the world are affiliated with the Lucius Trust. So again, if you'd like more information, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Let me recommend a new book we're carrying called Hostage to the Devil. Hostage to the Devil, written by Father Malachi Martin. And we have a four-tape set of my interviews with Malachi before he passed away, entitled The Wisdom of Malachi Martin. You'll want to get the new DVD. It's called Rape of the Soul. It's based upon a full-length motion picture that was shown in 12 major markets earlier this year, and then totally blacked out by the controlled media. I play a small part in this. I'm simply interviewed, along with Judith Reisman and several other people, going into, of course, this background of this spiritual battle, and you'll see examples of the pornographic, obscene, and satanic art, where the number 666 is used over and over again, being put forward by the Catholic Church. Now, this is a production of a conservative Catholic named Michael Colacci, who's had numerous death threats for himself and his family since he's had the courage to put this video together. You'll certainly want to, it was, of course, put together as a motion picture, but it's played in the film, theaters across America, and you've never heard of it. Rape of the Soul. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. You'll certainly want to get our award-winning documentary. It's called The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. It won the Best Documentary Award of 1,000 entries in the New York Film Festival this year. And I bet you haven't heard of it except here. Then, of course, the videos or DVDs, they sold their souls for rock and roll. Joe Schimmel's latest DVD or video, entitled The Da Vinci Con, and it's far more than Da Vinci Code. It's subtitled Hollywood's War Against America. That's The Da Vinci Con, Hollywood's War Against America. You'll want to get Megiddo 1 and Megiddo 2, and I have a little part in that as well. You'll need to get this information. You need to help us get it out across America. Until people understand we're involved in a spiritual war being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield, most people cannot understand anything that's going on. So please go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. Read the information that's there. Get the books and the videos that we have. We've got books written by Mandy B. Hall. They're not listed on our website, but we carry his book, The Lost Keys of Freemasonry. The Secret Teachings of All Ages, The Secret Destiny of America by Mandy Hall, who is a Satanist. You need to get these books. You need to read them. You need to understand what the enemy is doing. Because, of course, the ultimate goal is the destruction of America. And believe me, we're moving towards a revolution in Mexico. We're moving towards increasing violence in America. We're moving towards the destruction of the dream that once was America. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, let me ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Wherever you're situated on this great, big, beautiful blue globe floating through the void of Yah's creation, it is Thursday, the 31st of August, 2006. That's right, folks. Tomorrow's the 1st of September. Where, oh, where has the time gone? The summer is just, and it's gone. And a lot of folks out there are kind of glad to see the heat go. I, for one, am glad to.